welcome to TwerpCast episode 70, BayCast, our 7th annual Triple Threat Cast. We will be discussing director, producer, actor, and general Hollywood nuisance, Michael Bay. Today, I would like to introduce you to someone with real crap on his resume. But since Michael Bay refused our invitation and gave us his autograph on a restraining order, we'll add that one to Leonard Nimoy, Stan Lee, and Megan Fox. I'll introduce you to executive producer Jim Caswell.
And sitting across from me, as always, is the incomparable, the incredible, the incompetent, Doug Zeitlin!
I resemble that remark. So as you understand, after 6 years of talking about incredible writer-producer-directors, this year we're going on to Michael Bay. Apparently we've hit the bottom of the barrel.
Please do not fool yourselves. Unlike the past 6 years, this is not a love letter. If anything, this is a poison pen letter.
We are giving the official TwerpCast kiss of death to Michael Bay.
We figure that seeing as neither Elementary or Beauty and the Beast were canceled this year, we still have a little bit of kiss of death left to give.
It would be illegal and perhaps immoral if we encouraged anyone to help us out with this. But if you come up with that on your own, well, then we have nothing to do with it.
We aren't encouraging anything bad to happen to Michael Bay. We just want him to stop making horrible films.
Yes. As the dread Pirate Roberts once put it, to the pain. That's all that Michael Bay deserves.
Now, you realize that by quoting a good movie like The Princess Bride, it seems kind of counterproductive.
Wow. Now I'm really thinking about what would The Princess Bride have been like if it was directed by Michael Bay? I could see entire armies crossing over to the land of Gildor.
You know those horses that they ride off into the sunset? They explode!
And during the sword scene, haha, I know something that you don't know. I'm not really left-handed. And in my right hand is a gun!
And of course you'd have the scene where Buttercup is sprawled over a fence wearing only a sundress and a smile.
But we digress. Why don't we start in reverse order and talk about his upcoming movies?
You mean his upcoming butchering of a childhood favorite?
That's the one I'm talking about.
And the sad thing is that we can qualify that as his upcoming butchering of a childhood favorite, as opposed to his previous butcherings of childhood favorites.
Yes, because American audiences didn't get tired of seeing it the first three times.
God, where to start with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? How about the fact that he originally was not calling it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but just Ninja Turtles?
Well, that's because in the original script, they were from outer space.
Yeah. I've seen the comics. I've seen the cartoons. I know that, as well as being mutants and ninjas and teenaged, that some of their villains were aliens. So I understand that there's a science fiction component to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
The Kang says, you are correct.
But maybe referring to the source material before you start working on a movie might not be the worst of ideas.
Or, if you're Michael Bay, you could just pull shit out of your rectum.
Or, as he said about one of the Transformer movies, script? I don't need a script. I'm making a movie here.
I believe he said that about all of his movies.
Then there's April O'Neil.
If Michael Bay has a love fest with Megan Fox's body, he should probably just make a movie called Megan Fox's Body and not try and pretend it's about something else.
I still hold to the fact that they could have easily have had Megan Fox in Transformers 3. Just take a cardboard cutout of her, lean her up against something, and it's essentially the same thing.
Problem is, no groping. And I don't mean this for the audience, I mean this for Michael.
Yeah, but that can't be the reason why he brought her back for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, she's married now to Brian Austin Green. Unless Brian Austin Green is into that kind of thing. Of course, given his career, he might be willing to share just to get some money into the household.
Well, let's face it, it's Hollywood. And I do not mean this derogatorily, but things are a lot looser sexually out there.
The question is she a slut or is she a prostitute?
As far as I can tell, she's getting paid for it.
So, have you gotten the feeling yet that this isn't going to be our typical nice, we love these people TwerpCast?
No. I love Michael Bay. Gives me something to complain about. When there's nothing else out there to talk about, it's easy, cheap material.
Yes, but we already talked about Megan Fox.
Yes, if we are talking about Megan Fox, does that count as oral sex?
If so, I need to get tested for STDs.
The interesting thing I find about her choice of husbands is that at least she married in her class of actor. Somebody with no talent.
I saw Brian Austin Green in the Sarah Connor Chronicles. I still think he has more acting talent than she does.
Yeah, but I wonder who has the testicles in that relationship.
Let's put it this way. Brian Austin Green can at least deliver semi-believable dialogue. The only good thing that Megan Fox can pull off in the way of acting is laying across a motorcycle.
Okay, now I know this is supposed to be Michael Bay cast, but I kind of appreciated her at least in the How to Win Friends and Influence People movie.
But again, her best scene is when she takes off her dress and walks through the pond.
Well, yeah.
I hold to the fact that you can be an attractive actress and a talented actress at the same time. They don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Yes, Ellen Page. They don't have to be mutually exclusive. You are beautiful and extremely talented.
But let's get back to bashing Michael Bay, where it belongs.
Yes. So what I had thought and what I had hoped is they would go back to the source material on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I don't mean the 80s movies or the 80s television series. Cute point that I have noticed on the new television series, their cell phones, the ringtone, is the theme song from the 80s TV series.
Yes, I've noticed that as well.
Okay, that was cute. But anyways, I'm talking about the Eastman and Laird comic books, the really dark, brutal comics.
The ones where the fact that they were Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles didn't cut back on the fact that they were also killing machines.
Yes, they were sullen and callow teenagers who were ninjas. Wow, that was a bad combination. And I mean that in the good way.
Yeah, unfortunately, the 80s cartoon is better known than the original source material. Which I only say unfortunately because it doesn't do justice to the source material. The 80s cartoons were fun. I thoroughly enjoyed them. The first live-action movie was enjoyable for what it was. 2 and 3, well, they were just bad. I mean, there is no way to sit here and go, oh no, they had their redeeming qualities. No, they really didn't. They were bad.
Just more proof that if you have one movie that is very successful, you should automatically do a trilogy. Kind of like Transformers.
We'll get there.
You know, kind of what the irony is, the reason that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was considered a success is because it broke $100 million. Nowadays, people look at breaking $100 million and studios are like, we didn't get our money back.
That's because studios dish out way more than $100 million just in advertising alone.
I love Avengers, so don't get me wrong on this. But when you pay $250 million to produce a movie, you kind of expect to earn $1 billion in revenue. Sorry, Taylor Keach. I know that John Carter just didn't do it.
Speaking of advertising for just a second, and Avengers, we both have recently seen Man of Steel, even though we didn't get a chance to do a tour cast on it. And one of those key differences between Avengers and Man of Steel was the fact that
Avengers was a good movie.
And the fact that, yes, Avengers had a lot of advertising. And yes, it had tie-ins. I remember the commercial where they're dressed up as the Avengers and they're talking about saving the world using insurance. So yes, I know that there was that type of thing. But in the 2 weeks previous to Man of Steel getting released, it seemed like everybody had advertising tie-ins to Man of Steel. You couldn't go through a commercial block without seeing some form of advertising for Man of Steel. And that's revenue. That's money being paid out. Yes, they also get money back in for allowing these companies to use their product to advertise, but that's just a constant stream of revenue going out just to promote the movie.
Okay, so I want to bring this back to Michael Bay again. Controversy over the changes to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is all free advertising. Doesn't matter what he actually puts on celluloid. So putting out something controversial and then making controversial casting decisions, it all just builds up on the Twitter, you young folk.
And gets old coots like us talking about it. Going, how dare he? How dare he change our Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yes, I'm pretty sure at the end of this one, they're going to have to kill Shredder.
Yes. You know, a sudden realization that I'm having is that while we've often referred to Michael Bay as an evil genius, I really do think that he is an evil genius. He's able to use all the social networking, all of the news articles, all of the Twitter followings to promote his movie for free. And people are just silly enough to sit there and go, I want to see what kind of changes he did make to it. So I'm going to go see his movie.
I can't disagree with you on this. I think Evil Genius is almost a perfect description of Michael Bay. He has the ability to hand you a plate with a stinking pile of poop on it, and you'll pay him for it. I mean, if people stopped going to see his movies, if they went, oh, it's a Michael Bay film, it's not very good, I'm not going to go, the studios would stop using him to make movies. But he is a successful director. He has bought billions into the industry, and nobody is going to say no to him. They're going to say, thank you, may I have another?
And it doesn't matter how much we complain about the stinking pile of poo that was on the plate. The fact that we accepted the plate and said thank you is all that matters. We can sit there and complain about it. We can talk about how badly it stinks. We can talk about how many flies are buzzing around it. We can talk about the fact that it's setting up. It doesn't change the fact that it's a pile of poo, and we took it.
And using the Hollywood publicity machine, they're going to go, oh, those flies are an extra. You have to pay us more for that.
If you study the flies very carefully, you'll notice that they're Easter eggs.
But you'll need your 3D glasses. That's an extra $3.
And you'll be able to see it easier if it's on IMAX. That's another $5.
But these are things that actually we can't pin on Michael Bay. But Hollywood has, meaning his movies are in IMAX and in 3D.
And stink to high heaven.
Yes. Okay, so, you know, he's ruining our Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He's already has 3 horrendous movies about the Transformers. What's he going to do next?
Well, when you consider the fact that he swore up and down when Transformers 3 came out that he was done, he's told his story, he's ready to move on to something else, I promise out a stack of Bibles I'm done with Transformers, that means that the only logical thing is the next thing he's going to be doing is Transformers.
That makes perfect sense. Especially, like, in Hollywood, Bibles are actually just set dressings, so they're blank pages.
Wow, that explains a lot.
Yeah, I guess my understanding is that he was doing this pain and gain movie with Mark Wahlberg. And Mark Wahlberg slept with him, talked his way into getting a role in a new Transformers movie.
I actually kind of look at it slightly different. Because Mark Wahlberg doesn't need to beg, sleep, or steal a role in the next Transformers movie. I think it was probably more of a case of somebody sitting there going, hey, Mark, you're an action star. Hey, Michael, you're an action director. We really should pair you guys up on something else besides this pain and gain movie that isn't going to sell any tickets whatsoever. Let's pair you up on something that'll actually make some money. Hey, how about another Transformers movie?
You know, I know you said it really sarcastically, but this reminds me of an interview I saw with Robert Downey Jr. right before the first Iron Man movie. And the interviewer had asked him, well, how did you come to be cast as Iron Man? And his answer, and he was deadpan serious about this, is I looked at all these other actors, and they had franchise movies where they were making lots of money and then getting sequels and making lots of money on the sequels. He says, I can do that too. And he waited to find a script that would be a franchise movie. And he specifically sought out the role of Iron Man so he could do that too. Okay, so that's Robert Downey Jr. And that's fine. I enjoy the Iron Man franchise. I suspect Mark Wahlberg, who I do respect as an actor than I ever will for his time as Marky Mark.
It's funny because every time somebody brings up Marky Mark to him, you can literally see him cringe at the fact that, oh, somebody's bringing that up again.
The best thing that I ever heard about Marky Mark was a comedian saying, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. And that's something that happens to underwear. But he's actually a really good actor. I will admit, first time I saw it, I was shocked. I thought it was a fluke. But now I actually like seeing movies with him in it. And I think at this point, he's looking for that franchise movie.
It could be. I mean, after all, it's not like it's unheard of for Michael Bay to make 3 Transformer movies.
And the studios love this. I mean, there's going to be a Pirates of the Caribbean 5, and it's not called The Lone Ranger, despite what everybody thinks. We know that Transformers 4 is going to have car chases, gunfights, and explosions. I don't know what your problem is.
The problem is that it will only have explosions, car chases, and gunfights. Michael Bay doesn't do story. He does filler to get from action scene to action scene. And just having action scene after action scene after action scene does not make for a good movie.
It seemed to work for The Man of Steel. It made a lot of money.
well, you're forgetting about the first hour and a half of Man of Steel and only concentrating on the
last hour and a half, which was all car chases, gunfights, and explosions.
Yeah. Personally, I really enjoyed the first half and couldn't wait for the last half to end.
Okay. There were elements of that movie that I enjoyed. I really liked that Lois Lane. Okay, there was an element of this movie I enjoyed.
But we missed our window of opportunity to rail on Man of Steel. This time we're railing on Michael Bay.
Okay, Zack Snyder is Michael Bay's love child.
Now, I don't think that that's at all fair. Zack Snyder does know how to tell a story. He showed us that in the first hour and a half of Man of Steel.
What about all his other movies?
There was storytelling in Watchmen.
He didn't write that story.
Well, this is true. Technically speaking, he didn't write Man of Steel either.
David Goyer, when I meet you, I'm going to give you my 2 cents. Believe me, coming from me, that's a lot.
Oh, I could so go off on the whole David Goyer, how he knows his comic books and is actually a very good comic book movie writer. He just has a really dark side, and Superman is not a good fit for a dark side. But that would be really digressing.
He was going to write a Lobo movie, wasn't he?
I think a Lobo movie by David Goyer would rock.
Oh, Jim, we could wrestle about that idea all day long.
So would that wrestling match take place on Witch Mountain?
Yes. I think to calm us down, we might need a pacifier.
And one, if not both of us, would probably need the Tooth Fairy.
Jim, if you want to get away from me, you're going to have to be fast and furious.
5 and 6. But again, we're not talking about Snyder, we're not talking about Goyer, we're not talking about Johnson. We're talking about Bay. Michael Bay!
It seems when you're talking about bad movies, it's really easy to get derailed, because most of them meet that qualification.
Within our circle, you are renowned for being the explosions, car chases, and gunfights guy. I'm talking about how that's what you like in a movie. What makes Michael Bay different? If that's your criteria for a good movie, why is Michael Bay not a good director?
That's a really good question, Jim. And I guess it really comes down to, there's a difference between a good movie and a movie that I'm going to like. Honestly, Man of Steel really did have maybe an hour's worth of gunfights, explosions, and car chases. But it's that little bit of story, and I'm trying not to give any spoilers here, but the story was written just off enough that was not my Superman and I didn't like it. But when you come back to Transformers, and I will never ever say that Transformers is a good movie, but it did have those car chases, explosions, and gunfights, and I kind of liked it. And I know it was a bad movie, but I liked it. And if you really want to look at the history of movies, even a show like Plan 9 from Outer Space has gunfights, car, and explosions in it. And that's the worst movie ever made. That has people throwing plutonium at one another.
Yet another case of a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Which makes most Americans really dangerous. So I don't think I've answered your question directly. Basically, what Michael Bay does is he creates a thread of story. And I think that really what you need for story is more than a thread. You really need, I don't know how to continue the analogy, a rope, a bungee cord. I mean, you really need a strong foundation to build an action story that really is very successful. But I think that really what he's good at is taking that really thin thread and tying a loop into an action story.
You need more than a thread, you need a road, something that will hold up under a little bit of pressure and support the movie as opposed to something that is simply connecting one scene to another scene.
Take a successful action movie, and admittedly this is an 80s movie, but Die Hard. And there's something more to Die Hard than there is to Transformers, really. There's the backstory between John and his wife. They're a couple that's going through troubles. There's the fact that even though they're going through troubles, he really loves her and he wants to save her. There's the fact that he's a detective and he understands intuitively that there's something more going on with the bad guys than just we're holding these people hostage. And yet still the movie successfully weaves in a lot of gunfights, some really good explosions, not so many car chases, but they do blow up a helicopter.
I don't know, would the bodies falling onto the cop car count as a car chase?
Yes. Yes, they do.
And honestly, you just hit upon one of the reasons why I thought Die Hard 3, 4, and I haven't seen 5 yet, but I'm assuming that it has a similar theme to it, why these movies aren't as good as the original, because the whole concept of my wife's life is at stake, people that I care about are at stake, it's more than just getting into a fight. There's an emotional stake involved that we're missing from 3 and 4, and the absence of it was felt.
And I think this is one of the keys why Michael Bay movies actually fail as stories. I mean, obviously, they make a ton of money. But as movies and as stories, take something like Armageddon, because there is this huge story in that movie that probably has the most script of any movie he's ever done.
It's all bad script, but there is script there. There is background there.
Well, exactly. You have Liv Tyler, who is playing Bruce Willis's child. You've got Ben Affleck, who's playing the love interest. I mean, you have a ton of potential interaction between these characters. And it's just awful. Painful to watch. I don't think Liv Tyler is a very good actress. I think she's famous for being the daughter of somebody famous.
But she still has more talent than Paris Hilton and Kim Kardashian combined.
Yes. So does your average field mouse. I'm not sure why Michael Bay cast her, but in one of the really big emotional scenes, this scene that really touches the audience, where the daughter is crying because she knows she's never going to see her father again. And this is something that they could draw the people in and say, oh, they're so emotional and she's so good at this. He filmed the back of her head.
Yeah.
And, okay, I agree with his decision because I think Liv Tyler's a really bad actress. But then why did he cast her?
Because she looked really good laying out on that blanket.
Well, yeah. She certainly has had her moments of eye candiness. I would agree with that.
The problem is that with most female roles in a Michael Bay film, whether you're talking Megan Fox or Liv Tyler or Tia Leone, the main purpose that they have in his films are to A, look good in skimpy clothing, and B, be rescued.
Okay, Jim, deep, dark secret. I kind of like Bad Boys. Don't tell anybody, it's a secret. Perhaps it's because I have a little man crush on Will Smith. Again, don't tell anybody.
Oh, don't worry, I won't be telling anybody. But strictly based on the movies that he's produced, I think I can honestly refer to Michael Bay as a male chauvinistic pig.
Jim, he's just an a-hole. Or, as my teenage self would have said, no, he's the whole A.
Yes, I've known you long enough to know that you've been a geek all your life, dude.
Well, since we've already digressed backwards, let's talk a little bit more about Armageddon.
Armageddon was one of the hardest movies for me to sit through. Not only because it was bad, but because it was drawn out bad. This was one of the first movies that I can remember sitting there going, would you just hurry up and finish the movie already? Can anything else bad happen to these people?
Probably shouldn't have asked that question, because Michael Bay found an answer for you.
And that was the problem. Every single possible thing that could go wrong happened to this crew. They had the worst possible luck of anybody. The only thing that could have been worse for them would have been the rocket ship blowing up on the launch pad. But he wouldn't have done that because that would have been a blessing to the rest of us.
See, the way this movie went and the logic of this, the rocket would have exploded and been destroyed, but the rocket ship attached to it would have been damaged but made it to the asteroid / meteor, but just in time.
It's pretty bad when you're sitting there going, oh no, Bruce Willis has died. He's the whole reason I came to see this movie. The lucky bastard. He doesn't have to sit through the rest of this.
That was probably in his contract. If this filming goes over 13 days, I'm done.
The only movie that was worse...
Well, we've already talked about Plan 9.
...of Michael Bay's was Pearl Harbor. And if Pearl Harbor is an example of Michael Bay's storytelling ability, maybe it's a good thing he doesn't try to tell a story.
I'm wondering maybe if Pearl Harbor was the Michael Bay version of Treason.
I think somebody sat there and went, you know what? Look at how well Titanic did. Maybe we should do a historic piece, but with explosions and gunfights and car chases. Let's get Michael Bay to do a period piece. You know, when you're dealing with a period piece, especially one that is so ingrained into American society as being a tragedy, it should be able to invoke some level of emotion. The only emotion that I had during Pearl Harbor was, when is this thing going to end?
Yeah, I heard he's going to do another period piece. Abraham Lincoln, Confederate Hunter. Okay, if we tie our conversation together, I think what we're really talking about through all of Michael Bay's work is this lack of human emotion. And yes, I heard that exact same statement that Michael Bay said. I'm making a movie, I don't need a script. And he's just lost so much because of that. that he could be making action movies which are successful and really good movies at the same time. There's no reason he can't do that. Well, maybe there is. Armageddon and Pearl Harbor sucked.
Along those same lines, The Island. Another movie where, presumably, there could have been some decent storytelling involved. But it really felt like he glazed over all the story so he could get to the action sequences. Story isn't there to be glazed over. It's there to carry the film. And the action sequences are supposed to be the filler, not the main thing that carries it.
It's pretty much a storytelling. It doesn't matter whether it's on television or in a book or literally the original audio storytelling or movies. You have this building. You start out small. You explain, this is the situation. And then you build to this crescendo. And you explain, these are the characters. And this is why things are important to the characters. It's really drama. And it should be building tension in your stomach, in your shoulders. And you should be thinking, oh my gosh. It really doesn't matter what the situation is. Oh my gosh, there's giant robots on Earth. Or, oh my gosh, the Confederates and the Union, they're building towards war. It does not matter. And then after you've built up all this tension, booyah! Here's the payoff.
The term literally is the climax.
And essentially what Michael Bay has, I can't argue the fact that he's done this successfully, as he's just basically said, we can have a 2-hour climax. And speaking as a guy, that's, wow.
That sounds exhausting.
But he's done that very successfully, and that's what the studios want. But it's not really good storytelling.
You know, we said it jokingly, but it really is true. It looks great on paper, but in payoff, there's no substance. There's no good feelings afterwards. It's something that you should be able to feel good after, not be sitting there going, oh, when is this going to end?
You know, literally just popped into my head. The reason why this works in Hollywood is movies have become heroin entertainment. It's 2 hours of, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, and then you're done. And you're empty, and you haven't had any fulfillment. And so you're waiting for that next 2 hours. You're like, oh, I really need it. I really need the next movie.
Congratulations, America. You're heroin addicts.
You know, I love movies, but I'm just as guilty of it as everybody. I can't say you people out there who paid to see Superman are the cause, because I paid to see Superman too.
And you paid to see Man of Steel.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk about a director I actually respect. I want to see Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing. I really want to see that. I think that's going to be an incredible movie. But the fact is, I'll probably see it and buy it, and then I'm done. The Avengers, I loved, and I'm going to watch it over and over and over. And yes, I will first qualify this by saying Avengers is one of those movies that has the action explosions and the story to it, but it's still got explosions and gunfights and car chases in it.
Oh, you haven't heard? Much Ado About Nothing. It'll have gunfights and car chases and explosions in it. Not.
Really, no, the point isn't really to compare and contrast those movies. It's to say that really, I'm guilty. I want to see The Avengers more than I want to see Much Ado About Nothing.
Well, I think one of the key differences between you and, no offense, but typical movie-going America is the fact that while you really do enjoy the gunfights, the car chases, the explosions, you are able to also sit there and go, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing a Shakespearean movie. I wouldn't mind seeing...
British highbrow comedy?
Yeah. Your tastes go beyond the explosions, car chases, and gunfights. You happen to enjoy them, and we happen to harp on them a lot, but you're able to enjoy other things as well. If all you have is a steady diet of car chases, explosions, and gunfights, you're really missing out on a lot of really good quality entertainment, and you need to expand your horizons.
You know, I couldn't agree more, and we see this a lot with comedians. Talk about, from what I consider our generation, Robin Williams, doing really stupid, just off-the-wall comedies, becoming a really well-respected actor. Okay, he's done some really shitty movies recently, I'm sorry. But if you look at things like Good Morning Vietnam and Good Will Hunting and the Dead Poets Society, he has acting chops, in addition to being an incredibly funny comedian. Now, I don't like Jim Carrey's comedy. I don't think that he is very funny, but he has pulled off some amazing dramatic roles. Now, if I had to make a prediction of someone I think is going to head this way in the future, I would say Seth Rogen. Again, you could argue whether or not he's really funny. I mean, I think he's known for being a comedian, though.
He's known for being a comedian. I would not necessarily call him funny.
Of this generation, he's really popular. But when I watch him, I think, in my opinion, that he's got some acting chops. And if he stops trying to be funny, he could be a really good dramatic actor.
I really wish he hadn't tried to be funny in Green Hornet.
Yeah. Green Hornet was just doomed from the beginning. And yeah, it had car chases, gunfights, and explosions in it. But it also had multiple Katos, multiple writers, multiple directors. It was a movie that nobody knew how to do.
No. There was one person who knew how to do it. But Kevin Smith got fired from the project.
I would love to have seen what Kevin Smith saw out of the Green Hornet. I feel like it would have been a very faithful Green Hornet interpretation. I would worry that it would be Clerks with Superheroes.
Remind me at some point to loan you the first 12 issues of the new Green Hornet comic book. It is Kevin Smith's version of Green Hornet, and it was marvelously done. I wish that the Green Hornet movie had been that Green Hornet movie. But again, not Rogancast, Baycast.
Not Smithcast. Well, I think we've done that.
Yes, we have. If you want an example of one of our love letters to a triple threat, that's a good example.
Yeah, Jim, remember when Kevin Smith was actually relevant to the current generation?
Yes, I do.
You old man. Anyways, Michael Bay, who apparently is relevant to this generation.
God help them all. I think to start to work to sum things up, it's obvious that we have no respect for Michael Bay. And it isn't because he started out doing music videos.
And really, I can't stress this enough. If you still have respect for Michael Bay, after hearing everything we've had to say, you need to remember that he got his start doing a music video for Donny Osmond's Soldier of Love.
And honestly, I think I can say that his ability to tell a story has not grown since the music videos. He's still telling the same level of story.
If only that music video had been interrupted by gunfights, explosions, and car chases. Any one of the three probably could have ended his career.
He's big on flash. He's low on substance. There's a reason why we cringe when we see flashed up on the screen by Michael Bay.
Well, as always, we appreciate you listening to TwerpCast. We encourage your feedback. Please write Jim at twerponline.net. We can be found on Google+, Facebook, Zanga, and MySpace.
Thanks for listening, everybody. TwerpCast is a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2013.
In the theater of your mind, imagine a car chase filled with gunfights ending in an explosion.